Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra. Versus the Chicago Blackhawks.
The theme music sort of, I think, should be the entrance that we make before the show.
Just you, Drew.
Just me? Yeah. I'm the only one who should make an entrance?
Yeah.
Okay. Vancouver, Chicago. Vancouver has done what they needed to do in the first two games, and they've taken advantage of a Chicago team that's frankly not as good as they are.
That's right.
And secondly, and probably most importantly at this point, is a tired hockey team.
Look tired. Look tired at the end of the season, and look tired again last night.
They have to play 82 games to make it to the playoffs. They have to play,
So do the other teams, Drew.
I know, but they 82 hard games.
Yeah.
They had to play 100 games last season.
Yeah, no, I agree.
They had the shortest time off.
They're absolutely tired.
They look tired.
Yeah, they do look
tired. Not as good, and they look tired. Really, Vancouver should do what they do in a 1-8 series. Now, I think Chicago will probably win game three, because I don't see them getting swept or anything along those lines, because I think they have too much pride.
Mm-hmm.
But Vancouver should be able to dispatch them relatively easily.
Yeah, and I had Vancouver in the series. I mean, everybody in this room had Vancouver in the series. I mean, talk about Chicago. This is not the same team as they were last year. And that, you know, that's stating the obvious. But just why we talked about it in the first segment of the show, there's not enough dangerous players on this team right now.
No, there's just,
it's not enough.
Taves and Kane are top flight players, but after that, there's a significant drop off.
I thought out of those top guys, I thought that, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, I didn't think Taves has played his best hockey, and I don't think Kane or Hossa haven't either, but Kane and Hossa were at least creating offense, whereas Taves wasn't. We talked about a guy like Ben Smith scoring yesterday.
He looked good,
Michael Frolik looking good, but
not bad.
I mean,
but those aren't guys who are going to win you a playoff series.
But those are guys they need to win the playoff series, Drew.
I know.
I mean, you look top four versus top four in terms of talent. We talked about this; it's fairly even.
Yeah,
but Sedin's haven't. I mean, looked better last night, but
they haven't looked. They haven't looked as good as they've looked all season.
Chicago depth hasn't been great, but if Ben Smith gives you two goals, Taves line has to give you something.
I mean, it's like Michael Ignatieff winning that debate, Drew. I mean, Vancouver, it's not even close. You would agree Ignatieff won that debate, right, Drew?
I swear to God, I'm not talking politics right now. We're not talking politics.
You did on TV.
We have a broad audience, and I'm not talking politics.
Drew,
your focus, Ezzy. Keep your focus. I don't even remember saying that clip.
That's a good clip.
Remus, do we have the Drew on CBC clip?
No.
For everyone who doesn't know, Drew Mandel is a star. He was on CBC.
Yeah, he's a new star.
He was on CBC representing the Liberal Party, doing a fine job.
You know, we'll probably have the clip ready for next segment.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about, Drew. You're a spokesperson.
Come on, Drew.
Not anything. Can we continue on talking about
Vancouver?
You're a scholar and a gentleman, Drew.
Break it down that way, guys. Sure, you argue the bottom, Vancouver guys, Yannick Hansen's been really good, guys like that, but they have missed Malhotra, and I'll tell you something. If you look at some of the we talk about the Vancouver guys who stand out. I mean, Maxim Lapierre looks awful.
Yeah.
I mean, Hodgson had, I think, a helper last night, but Vancouver's depth guys don't look as great as maybe you'd think. Chicago's depth guys, if you're going to win the series if you're Chicago, your best players need to be your best players.
Yeah, and they haven't been.
You know what, Rich? I don't disagree with that, but we just had Bob Duff on about 20 minutes ago, right? And he was saying that Detroit probably doesn't match up very well against San Jose. San Jose beat Detroit last year, and nothing has changed, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I agree with what you're saying, but I still think, though, that if Vancouver's able to easily dispatch Chicago, how are they not going to be able to easily dispatch any other team?
Disagree. Totally disagree.
Oh, I disagree entirely.
Come on, this is
Chicago,
your pick.
Chicago, no.
Richie,
Chicago.
Vancouver's your pick. Now you're not saying they're going to go to the...
easily?
I still have them as a pick.
I didn't say easily.
Yes, you actually did say easily.
Okay, I meant to say, how are they not going to dispatch any other team?
Because they're going to be playing against better competition.
But they're better than their competition.
They're not head and shoulders better than
their
competition.
Two games.
I think they are.
Guys, two games and Taves has nothing.
Okay,
and Hossa has nothing.
I know.
You're not going to win unless Taves and Hossa have anything.
And I don't think Chicago is going to win because they just don't seem to have it this year.
I'm saying they've only lost, they lost 2-0 and 4-3.
Yeah.
That game, they were buzzing at the end of last night's game.
That's right. But
I mean, for all about Chicago's weaknesses, Drew, they've been in both games. They have four posts in game one. I know Vancouver had like three posts, but they have four posts. I mean, it hasn't been a dominating performance by Vancouver.
No.
It's been a very sound performance.
I didn't say dominating.
Right, I'm just putting that into context here. Now, you look, if they were to win, and I think they will win,
yeah,
they don't have to play. The benefit of being the first seed, you don't have to play the second or third seed until the conference finals.
That's right. You're supposed
but
to.
Watching them yesterday, I didn't think at all that they'd easily dispatch of. I didn't think. I had some concerns about their depth versus a team like San Jose.
How many playoff games does anybody ever easily dispatch another team?
I realize, of course, and then that's the point. But right now, Vancouver, a couple things. Vancouver's, people say, oh, you know, Hanson scored, blah, blah, blah. I don't necessarily know how good I would feel about the Vancouver third and fourth lines. And that doesn't matter really against a team without any third and fourth lines.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, Kyle Wellwood is better than Yannick Hansen on San Jose?
Vancouver, I mean, San Jose can put out combinations of, you know, depending on how they match it up, they can put a combination of Thornton and Heatley on
That's
one
your
line.
Top line.
Thornton and Heatley on one line. Hold on. Thornton and Heatley on one line. Marlowe.
And Pavelski.
And Setoguchi, another line. Klo and Pavelski.
Richard Pavelski's on the second line.
I'm just saying, another line. Klo and Pavelski. Ez. That's three groups that can kill you.
But usually the guys you mentioned are usually on the top two lines.
They don't play those guys together all the time anymore. As if you watch the first game,
Rafi Torres is coming back for Vancouver next game.
Overrated.
So his impact will be.
He's better than what they have right now. He's better than Higgins. You know Higgins there.
Yeah.
Or Higgins playing on the second line though. He's better than what they have, but he's not great and he's a streaky scorer. He can get he can get going. He doesn't have the most confidence with the puck. He's physical. You can do all that stuff. Not a great passer, though. So,
if you look at Vancouver,
I think the love for Vancouver in the Canadian media right now is warranted because they're a darn good team. But I do have some concerns about them. That doesn't mean I'm not picking them to go all the way, because I am. But I have some concerns about them. If they had Malhotra right now,
Okay.
I would say, I feel very, very confident about their chances. I still feel confident, but not very confident. Take that for what it's worth.
Okay.
That's reasonable. I mean, it's reasonable.
Their depth gets a huge hit without him there.
Well, I was going
to
say...
Kessler gets thrown into more defensive draws. The guys are put in less favorable situations.
See, Richie, it's to me, honestly, in the Western Conference, because I think the Stanley Cup winner is going to come out of the West. I think, even though my preseason pick is totally not going to happen, for those who don't remember, L.A. versus Tampa Bay, it's a long shot. But you picked Vancouver versus Pittsburgh. I think it will be Vancouver. I think it will be Vancouver, and I'm not jumping on a bandwagon here. This is an analytical point of view. I think that when you mentioned, you know, in your opinion that, you know, because San Jose can throw out a Klo or something like that, or a Pavelski on separate lines and go out three lines. And that is a good point, and you are right about
Vancouver
that.
Vancouver has 6D, you can handle that.
Right, yeah. And that's the thing. I think when you look at the West, I think that it surprised me a little bit, Drew, that Bob Duff said that he thinks San Jose will give Detroit a problem again, because in my opinion, Detroit's forward group is better than San Jose's. I think aside from Vancouver, Detroit is second, because, sure, you've got, and this is the playoffs, too, and I think
mentioned Couture, by the way, before, so.
Yeah, that's right. There's only really three teams, I think, two other teams aside from Vancouver that have the depth they have at any position.
I just have, I mean, I'm trying to gather my thoughts here. I'm choking on my own words. You look at Vancouver, and, you know, it certainly hurts losing Malhotra.
It's a huge loss. Yep.
But really, even without Malhotra, what team has better offensive depth than they do?
San Jose and Detroit.
You think?
That's good, at least. I would say San Jose's got better offensive depth.
Okay, then what team has, then go through the three aspects of the game.
Okay.
Goaltending, defense...
Okay. Vancouver's goaltending is as good as it gets. It's better than San Jose is.
Vancouver's got the best goaltending in the West?
Yeah.
Okay. So check mark for Vancouver.
Okay, but not that substantial over a guy like, you know, goaltending can move both ways. You know?
Right, sure.
But yeah, they have better goaltending.
It's about
their defense, 1-6.
Yeah.
1-6 is to me, is as good as Detroit. It's better than San Jose.
Right.
They're not as good a forward as San Jose, in my opinion.
Right.
In terms of Detroit,
it's obviously better than
there.
The Anaheim.
Detroit's really a draw throughout the lineup, except for goaltending, and if Luongo loses his confidence or whatever it may be, you know, lets in a goal like he did to Stahlberg yesterday. You know, who knows? Coaching matchup, I mean, you can't beat Babcock. Foligno's a great coach, though. So that's a coin flip to me.
Yeah, I mean...
Now, I have Vancouver because I have that a little bit of an advantage. You know, Vancouver and seven kind of thing. Well, we're jumping ahead. But there's if it's coming to a seven or a game series or a 6-7 game series, it's a lot of luck involved in that.
Oh, of course. There's always luck involved. I mean, but if you look at it, I think people are talking too much about Vancouver as being this, you know, juggernaut. I also think that some on the flip side, people are might be looking for holes where they don't necessarily exist. Or overstating the holes that they have.
I don't love those second. I don't love those third and fourth lines. I don't.
What team's third and fourth lines do you love?
San Jose, though. Now
you love those third and fourth lines?
Both better. I do.
Okay.
And are you going to throw Datsuk's line up against Sedin's? I am.
Yeah. I like Detroit's third and fourth lines. I like what the players bring to the table. Mm-hmm. I don't think those are...
More useful as far as I'm concerned.
There's two teams.
I don't think they're fabulous.
Guys, there's only two.
So you like Glass and Oreskovich and LaPierre and
Cody Hodgson.
You like all those guys better than Detroit's guys.
I don't think they get on the ice, so I don't think it's going to matter
do.
As much.
What do you mean they don't
get on the
ice?
LaPierre
played 11 minutes yesterday. Hodgson played 10. Oreskovich played 7.
I don't think they're going to get onto the ice.
Glass
in another
played 14.
I don't think they'll get onto the ice in a more competitive environment.
Well, Vigneault plays his guys in situations to succeed. The Sedins don't usually play a lot of minutes. Yesterday, Daniel played 19, and Henrik plays
because they don't need to play.
Henrik played 18
because he doesn't need to ride him into the ground in the first round against Chicago.
All season
right now.
He hasn't. So if he's going to adjust and throw him more minutes, okay, maybe. But also, can they handle it?
I don't see why they wouldn't be able to handle it. I mean, these are the top, some of the top flight NHLers. What do you mean? Can they handle it? If they can't handle it, they got serious fundamental problems.
You don't generally increase a guy's minutes by 4 minutes in one game.
You don't think that Ovechkin's going to start playing 25 minutes a game in the second round?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
If they need to? I think they are. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll break down the San Jose-Los Angeles series.
It's heated in here.
No, it's not heated. It's just good
conversation. It's good. It's heated. I like it. It's heated. It's hot in the kitchen, Drew.
What
if you can't handle the heat, get out of the kitchen.
What are you talking about? Let's go to break.
I love these new Drew clips. They take over from my clubs.
Yeah. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're going to give Drew a little break right now because this week Drew was the star on a newscast in Winnipeg.
Drew's on the CBC late night news.
Davis, play the clip. Remus?
You guys, I sabotaged the clip.
I don't know.
Drew, let the clip play.
It's a clip.
We're playing the clip. I don't know what's going on.
Clip's not working?
No, we're having some technical difficulties.
You guys try and make fun of me, and it backfires on you.
Unbelievable.
Oh, am I lucky. Tim,
I want to hear that clip. I really want to hear Drew's biased opinion on the debate.
You guys can try and get to that later on in the program. In the meantime, let's go to the Los Angeles San Jose series.
The San Jose Sharks versus the LA Kings.
Somebody up there must be looking out for me.
No, we're going to get that clip on air.
We're getting that clip.
Yeah, I don't think so. The technical difficulties.
We'll tell Aaron Ward to wait if we have to.
before the end of the show, we'll have it on the air.
Great. I'm thrilled about that. Still,
so Aaron, hold on. We got to play a clip about the Liberal debate.
Coming up in the next segment is Aaron Ward of TSN. We will not be preempting Aaron Ward. Don't worry about that. You guys can make fun of me all you want at a later date and time, as you usually do. L.A. San Jose, first game of the series was two nights ago, and L.A., made a game of it,
LA.
Took San Jose all the way to overtime.
Yeah, I agree.
But, I mean, it just seemed it was Jonathan Quick that was kept him in that game, stood on his head.
Quick played really good, Drew.
Looked a lot better than last year.
Yeah.
People attribute that, A, to a year of seasoning, B, to being less tired. You know, Bernier playing more games this year. I think Quick played 70 or 72 games last year. So he looked square to the puck. He looked strong. Last year I watched him. I thought every shot was going in. Ezzy, I thought he looked terrific.
Yeah, and this is not because I picked the Kings, but... They played well. They played a good road game. Doughty and Johnson were playing good minutes. Mitchell and Scuderi looked good.
Yeah.
The Kings are really, really thin on forward. But Williams was in the lineup.
How about Williams' performance?
Played well. Surprising. I didn't expect him back. Didn't expect him back this early, Drew.
And he played with one arm practically.
He played well with one arm.
He played terrific. What an impressive performance that was.
The Kings' lack of foot speed really hurt them.
Well,
Ryan Smith slow. Dustin Penner got pushed to the third line and play. You know, in his place was Ponkarovsky slow. Penner slow. Smith slow. Stoll's not a great skater.
We've been talking about the lack of speed.
Now suspended.
Yeah, suspended for the next game. What's that going to mean? How does that affect the team?
Essentially, they're de facto second-line center there.
Yeah.
He's huge on faceoffs, and he plays his point in the second power play. That's a huge loss. I mean, he's not the best offensive player, but it's a huge loss.
Especially for a team thin on defense.
Thin on offense.
Yes, right.
Absolutely. In context, it's a big loss.
Yeah, I mean...
Now you're playing with your top two centers. So Hanzus has to play more minutes. I like Michael Hanzus, but he's not an offensive player. He can contribute a little bit.
If L.A. can win without Anze Kopitar and Jarrett Stoll, if they can somehow win in San Jose tonight, that will shock me.
You know,
I think San... I picked them just to go along with my preseason cup pick, but, I mean, they are just... They have nobody on forward anymore. Lost everyone.
It just seems like...
We playing that clip now?
No, we're not playing that clip now. We're talking about hockey right now. We're not playing that clip now.
I want to talk politics and your involvement in it.
Yeah, it's okay. Find another show to do that then. But we're
no, I want to do it on this show. Now.
No.
Okay, let's go.
San Jose, what did you see in their game?
I thought they should have controlled the puck more. I saw an amazing amount of speed. The skating of Logan Couture and Devin Setoguchi really, really, really put the Kings defensemen back on their heels. And let me tell you, Doughty and especially Jack Johnson are great skaters. That speed created opportunities. I'll tell you who I didn't see. No surprise.
Joe Thornton.
Did he play?
I saw him. He was floating.
Did he play? I want to know if he played in that game, because I didn't see him.
I couldn't believe what I saw from him. It was...
Healy scored in the first shift.
And then did nothing.
But that's Healy. He doesn't do anything and he scores. But he scores. So if he scores, that's fine.
You score, you can't criticize him too much if he scores.
That's his game. Finding open spots and scoring. Thornton wasn't even there, as far as I could tell.
It's Joe Pavelski's team now.
It is. I agree with that.
That I agree with completely.
He plays in all situations. He's a great hockey
player. Chloe was terrific. You know, there's a lot of those... I watched that San Jose team, guys, and you watch the roster. You think about it more, not only just this series, although Kings get more of a fight than I thought they would, but long term. You know, Boyle and Murray look good as a combo, and they played a lot of minutes.
Yeah. Vlasic
looked okay.
Too many minutes.
Demers sometimes gets too high in the defensive zone, meaning closer to the blue line than he probably should be. Wallin's a solid player, but that bottom four. Leaves some, you know...
A lot to be desired. We've
talked
leaves about
a lot to be desired.
I gotta tell you, I watched that... I made a point of looking...
What did you watch, that political debate?
I watched that to look for Joe Thornton.
Well, did you find him? Call me if you found him.
I found him lazy on a back check.
Always.
But, I mean, it wasn't even just lazy. Like, it was a scoring opportunity for the Kings right in front of the San Jose net, and Joe was just... Not doing anything. It wasn't tying up anybody. The puck just, I mean, really, L.A. should have scored on it. The puck just sort of skated past him. He was like, okay.
You should start calling him Sloppy Joe.
Well, that would be, you know, very... That's good. That would be a good nickname. That would, a good contribution right there. But...
kind of like Michael Ignatieff's contribution to the political debate.
They can't afford to miss Ian White, though. Has the status been updated yet?
No, but he took that hit. I mean, he looked a little woozy. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a concussion.
Yeah, well, yeah, they said he'd go into the quiet room.
Yeah. We might send Ezzy to the quiet room in a bit, by the way.
That's good. We might have to.
Yeah.
The San Jose lineup, though, I mean, I know they, you know, they outshot him 45-35. They controlled the puck for a fair amount of time, although LA had controlled the puck for more than I thought. They really did. They had control of the puck for more time than I thought they would. I thought they played a very solid game. They played a responsible game. They don't have the scores, and that's obviously going to be their downfall. But one thing I think you should watch for in terms of creating offense, I watch Jack Johnson didn't play 10 minutes at even strength. 22 minutes in a game with overtime is not that much. But
and it was a long overtime, too.
Jack Johnson is going to be a... it's interesting to watch him. I think to create offense, guys, they're going to... bank on their defense a bit, and when I say bank on the defense, I mean basically, you know,
engage them.
Yeah, and the three guys I'm focusing on would be Alec Martinez, their third pairing defenseman there, Drew Doughty, and then Jack Johnson. Jack Johnson was jumping into the play a lot, and it's amazing how good of a skater he is that he can jump into the play and get back before and other teams skate as hard as he can. He can get back. He's going to be trying to create offense. I mean, that's going to be a key. I think there's going to be a game or two where he jumps into a play and he creates a goal, and. But also, I think there may be a time in this series where he jumps into play and he gives up a goal, and that could be a key issue. That's one thing I caught from watching that game. Drew Doughty didn't look great; he got burned in that goal by Couture. But overall, Drew Doughty, I was going to give you what Drew Doughty gives you.
What role?
You know, all-star player.
What role is Joe Thornton best suited for on the San Jose Sharks team?
You know, Drew, I mean, that's what I'm talking about, though, and you're balancing the, you know, Joe Thornton played big minutes. He played, you know, he played as many minutes as any other forward on the team, more minutes than any other forward on the team in terms of even strength minutes. But because they can balance it out with three lines now, really, that can hurt you, his presence or lack thereof doesn't kill you as much as it usually would. When they were, you know, one-line team with a little bit, but Pavelski's still developing,
yeah,
it hurt you. That top line, Marlow, Thornton, Healy, while they're playing together.
When they go invisible, it really hurts you.
Now you have depth. Couture looks terrific. What, you know, five shots on net. Setoguchi looked good with his speed, too. You have seven guys. We talked about it before. Seven guys on the team who can score.
Which is a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot to throw at you.
Create offense.
But
and LA's got LA's guy LA has a good D, guys. LA has a very good D.
Mm-hmm. But you know, I just couldn't believe it watching Thornton. I mean,
Brad,
I shouldn't be surprised.
Old,
I know it's
same
the same old,
old
but
same old.
Is he just not wired?
It's just not. Yeah, it's just.
It's just not in his wiring.
You know what? The truth is, Drew.
Yeah.
He doesn't pick up his game in the playoffs. But the truth is that if you watch the regular season.
Yeah.
This is what he does every night.
I
know,
year.
But you can
get a bad year.
That's what he does every night.
You're right. He floats because he can get away with it. But
his style of play, so sometimes it shouldn't be necessarily just floating. A style of play, but create, you know, his lack of back checking is what bothers me. You can do what you want in the offensive zone if you're a passer like him. His lack of back checking. His lack of willingness to compete on that defensively.
You know, that's what I know.
But again, that's what he does during the regular season. Why would he suddenly turn it on?
Well, you would
is there a switch?
You would think there is.
Some people say there isn't.
You would think that there is. I mean, that's the lack of a back check on a scoring opportunity for your opponent. It's not like it was a difficult. It's not like it was a difficult back check that he'd have to make. It's not like he'd have to go out of his way.
Back checking is just a willingness. You know that.
I know it's a willingness, but I mean, the guy was right next to him. The puck went right past him.
Well, what happened against Anaheim 2 years ago with the Getzlaff in front?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just don't get it. Like, does he not want to win? Is he just happy collecting his paycheck?
You watch him in the Olympics? The same thing.
I know. I don't get it. I can't understand it. It's one thing if you've won five cups and you're at the downside of your career and you're hurt and you're bothered and you just can't do it anymore.
I think he suffers from lack of motivation or something, or he's got a lackadaisical attitude.
I think
his
game set, his mind is in-game mindset is not conducive to being a playoff warrior. It really isn't.
Can we consider him a winner?
He's won the Olympics.
What does that mean?
He's won the Olympics twice.
I know he's won the Olympics.
Twice.
Can you consider, when you look back at Joe Thornton's career, if he does not win a cup, is he a winner?
I don't know what a winner means because...
Well, winner means whatever you want, you know, to you, Richard Pollock. Is he a winner? You know, a guy like Steve Yzerman was a winner.
He's on that class.
Drew, you're a winner.
He leads his teams every year to the playoffs. He's been on championship teams before.
Well, he hasn't been on any Stanley Cup championship.
Olympics and World Cup.
Right. Where he played minimal roles.
World Juniors.
He played more than I think he should have in the Olympics. But yeah, no, I mean, he's played on all those kind of teams. Is he a winner? He's a winner.
Is he winning?
In a sense. But is he a winner in the sense? Is he a winner in the same breath as a Mark Messier or even a Jerome McGinley, who's a similar situation to Thornton, having won internationally but not in the NHL?
Yeah, but
he's not in McGinley's class as far as I can tell.
Or
that.
Nobody's ever accused of Ginla. I mean, there's lots of great players who don't actually win a Stanley Cup
I don't think he's in Ginla's class that way.
But nobody's ever thought that Ginla was anything other than a top-notch leader and a top-notch guy who would sacrifice every limb in his body. If Thornton ate a puck, if he got hit in the puck, got hit in the face with a puck, would you expect him to see him back on the bench stitched
up? I'd be more surprised if he ever got hit in the head of the puck. And hit the mouth of the puck. That means you have to get in the way.
I know, but would you expect to see him back on the bench stitched up with missing four teeth?
I don't know. I'm just saying I think that he leaves a lot to be desired. He brings a lot of great attributes to the table that you can't just find on the street. I mean, he has good passers you're going to find. He has great poise of the puck, great patience. But when it comes down to it, he is visible for many, 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 many long stretches.
Let's go to break.
The back-checking bothers me more than anything else.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Aaron Ward of TSN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Down 1 hour to go here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Check out the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Get the podcast sent directly to your iPod. Listen at your convenience. Also, follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, and follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And Michael Remus would like me to mention that if you go after the program to IllegalCurve.com, that's where you'll be able to find the clip of my performance.
There you go.
Analyzing the debate. I'm prepared to do that. I'll tell you what. If anybody's really that interested in seeing me on TV, they really should prioritize
your life
a little bit better.
You're on your BlackBerry in the video. Why weren't you looking at the camera?
We were all on our BlackBerry. I think it was about, we were sort of going with the fact that they call this the Twitter election because everybody's, you know, tweeting and everything else.
Was that the 2008 American election?
Well, we're a little slower.
Didn't people vote for Obama on Facebook?
No, I don't think you're allowed to do that.
You just liked his account, and that was a vote.
Anyways, we're trying to get Aaron Ward on the line. So once we hear from Aaron, we'll be glad to bring him to our listening audience. He's apparently his phone line's busy.
He's making plans.
Well, maybe Remus isn't dialing 9 before he's calling him.
Remus is working on it, as Remus is doing.
Ward's an interesting guest, guys, and for a number of reasons, but mainly because he's played on so many of these playoff teams before.
And that's a lot of what we're going to talk about. Yeah.
Played on Boston, played on Anaheim last year for the end of the season.
Right.
Played on Detroit for many years prior to that. So he got an interesting inside perspective, and we're going to try and get deep into that. I mean, that's what this show is all about if you're just tuning in for the first time. We're not going to ask, who do you think is going to win? You know,
that's
we're
a
gonna,
hell of a voice he just
well, we're going to ask you in-depth. We're going to ask in-depth questions about, you know, how the teams play, what kind of systems they're playing, why they're succeeding. And that's what we want to know. We want to know why. We want to know why. We want to delve deep into every question and hear the explanation behind it.
And Richie, Aaron Ward's done a good job on TSN.
Yes.
Aaron Ward was still in the NHL last year. His career ended last year. But 3 cups for Ward?
Yes.
3 cups, 2 with Detroit, 1... Or did he get 3 with Detroit?
2 with Detroit, 1 with Carolina.
2 with Detroit, 1 with Carolina. So he had a really good career, Drew. Defenseman, physical guy, big guy. And obviously he was drafted by the Jets but never played for the Jets. But he's done a great job for TSN. And you know what I wanted to mention? I told this to Richie off-air. Another guy that TSN's now got is Danico.
And your boy.
Another guy that won 3 cups. You know, not the prettiest hockey player to watch, but tough as nails, and got the job done. Absolutely. Playing with Niedermeyer there.
If you're an ex-NHL player and you want to get into broadcasting and TSN isn't hiring you, there's something wrong with you. They've got everybody.
Mike Johnson, Pekka.
Pekka's pretty good.
McTavish.
I like McTavish, too.
They have absolutely everybody. It's amazing. I mean, I guess when you have that much hockey to broadcast, you need a...
If you watch ESPN, they have, like, 14 channels and, like, 38 baseball analysts.
Well, you have... I mean, all those guys are running around doing...
It's like the old Bill Simmons joke, you know? Like, ESPN 8. We're already at, like, ESPN 4 right now.
Yeah, well...
Is there 4 ESPNs now?
ESPN, ESPN 2, ESPN U, ESPN Classic, and ESPN, ESPN News.
3 what about Vivo?
What is Vivo?
ESPN Vivo.
Anyway, can we get to the next series here?
Well, we're trying to get Aaron Ward on the line, so which series would you like to go with?
I mean... What do we got left here, Drew?
Anaheim-Nashville, Philly-Buffalo.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about Anaheim-Nashville first, because if we do have to have Aaron in the next segment, I have to go. You know that?
Yeah, you're out.
I'm leaving a little early again this week, but I will be back for the whole show next week. But watching the Anaheim-Nashville series, because I'm not going to be able to chime in on that, so let me get my little word in here.
Okay.
Nashville's got to stop taking penalties.
That's pretty...
And it's a simple thing. You know, Nashville's got to stop taking penalties. But it's the truth, because... You put on this power play on, you give these guys confidence, and then there's trouble. There's too much trouble. This power play is ridiculous. And they scored on a 5-on-3 in the first period yesterday, and they scored on a 5-on-4. And Randy Carlyle, by the way, would have got ripped apart. Because he called a timeout on the 5-on-3, and they scored just at the end of it. And give him full credit. They scored just at the end of it. But Anaheim scored 2 power play goals, and I know Nashville made a late run there, but Anaheim scored 2 power play goals, and that was it. They got the lead. Change the style of play. This is a squad that has so many dangerous scores. And you look at who scored yesterday for Anaheim, and you know why they won. Okay? Perry, Salani, Getzlaff, Ryan, and Ryan. That's their 4 best players. Their 4 best players scored yesterday. Your best players, you have a good chance of winning.
And they're rarely off the score sheet, but they were in game one.
Look how many penalties Nashville took, though. They took... 4 minor penalties in the first period, 2 minors in the second period, 6 minor penalties. That's you can't do that. And now, again, you look at it from the other way, and we previewed it. Anaheim taking penalties hurts them. But Nashville's power play is so bad. I know they got 1 power play goal yesterday, 2 power play goals. But it's so bad that you can take your chances. And if you notice another thing, I mentioned in the first segment, you got to match up Weber and Suter against that top line. The two power play goals happen. Weber scored on a power play to get it back, rooftop corner, off Emery's shoulder. And then Ryan came back. Ryan scored from Getzlaff, but it was not against a Suter-Weber combination. That was a matchup win for Anaheim, and they took advantage of it. And that third goal really was the big difference maker.
And they'll continue to take advantage of it. And when Barry Trotz is forced into a situation where his team's taking penalties and he doesn't have those guys on the ice, he can't have those guys on the ice all the time.
But Ezzy, this is my question. He took advantage of it now, but now they're going back to Nashville. That matchup should never happen in Nashville. You have last change.
You're right. They should be able to match up their shutdown defense against that line.
So the seven-game series still looks like it. I predicted a seven-game series on Monday, and I still feel that way.
Why does Shea Weber have a full beard already?
Man, Shea Weber's so good.
But who cares what he's doing?
No, ask Richie. I've always been the biggest Shea Weber fan. I'm just saying, he's got a full beard. He should have, it's only two games.
Shea Weber yesterday, guys, played 25 minutes. He got 2 points. I mean, he's looking good. Ryan Suter, 28 minutes. I mean, these guys play together. They're just dominant. Yesterday wasn't their best game, though. We'll say that. Yesterday wasn't their best game. They need to win. Their best players need to be their best players. Pekarinen needs to be better. He was tremendous in the first game. He wasn't great in the second game.
Let's talk about goaltending, because Anaheim's already gone to their second goalie. They went to Ray Emery after starting with Dan Ellis in game one.
He looks stiff.
Emery?
Literally. I mean, he doesn't have the mobility of a regular goaltender.
No, he's had his hip. Like he's.
I do worry about him.
Well, what's wrong with Jonas Hiller?
I mean, apparently he's got the balance problems that are in the vertigo, and the truth is, Drew, can you afford to play him into the series now? That's the question. If you got up 2-0, maybe you could play him, but the problem is, it's a catch-22. You get up 2-0, you can afford to play him, but you're up 2-0, you don't want to change anything. You get down 2-0, you can't afford to play him, because if you lose again, you're on an elimination game.
Right.
It's hard to play a guy in the playoffs. He's got to be so good in practice that he makes you think.
Well, then let me ask you, Ray Emery or Dan Ellis for you?
Well, you have to go with the guy who won. Ellis looked terrible in the first game, and I asked Eric DeHatch this last on Monday. It could be an advantage for Nashville. Trotz knows Ellis better than many other coaches.
Sure, because that's where he got his first breakthrough.
So and because Nashville's roster's changed so much, Ellis doesn't know the Nashville players, because there aren't as many of them, as much as the Nashville coaches, which hasn't changed, know him. That's an advantage. I would go with Emery right now and see what happens, and just try and see what happens with him. That there's a big advantage there. They know Ellis's weakness. Ellis probably has it in his head that they know that. He's not the best goalie the best of times. And I would stick with Emery. And Emery doesn't look great to me, but give him full credit for coming back.
Well, the fact he's even playing in this is amazing, we've documented that. But, I mean, it's really unfortunate. This Anaheim team.
It's an odd mix.
It's an odd mix, but if they had Jonas Hiller.
Yeah.
And the goaltending that he brings, I mean.
I think you'd put him in with San Jose and Detroit as contenders, but without Hiller, I don't think they are.
I agree with you. And because, I mean, what they shored up their defense. Their defense was an Achilles heel at the beginning, and they shored it up throughout the season with various trades and acquisitions. And then you put Hiller, who's one of the top five goalies in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed with that statement?
Yep.
Yeah, I do.
It's, you're not seeing the real Anaheim Ducks.
By the way, Vasilevskiy, got injured in that game in the second period. He did come back.
Yeah.
Huge. They don't have him. They're done.
Well, without a doubt. Yeah. Now, Bobby Ryan is potentially going to be suspended for the next game, or who knows how many games. There's a video of it, and we'll put the video up at www.illegalcurve.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the video of him. He was battling for the puck with Jonathan Bloom. Is that his name?
Yep.
Yeah. So, he's battling with the puck.
One of the good youngsters
with Jonathan Bloom, defenseman for the Predators, and he steps on the top of Bloom's foot. And it's pretty deliberate. It looks pretty deliberate, and it's going to be hard, given the precedent on those kind of stomping incidents,
mm-hmm.
where Pronger got eight games for it.
As Anaheim, yeah.
And Chris Simon got his entire career for it. Those are the last two stomping incidents. It's going to be hard for the NHL not to suspend Bobby Ryan for that stomp, as far as for that move. It looks like a deliberate attempt for leverage, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's trying to injure the guy, but he stepped right on the top of his foot. The video is at www.illegalcurve.com. You can check it out there.
He might get two games, he might get six.
Well, I don't think he's going to get six. I think he's going to get one game. He's going to get one game. But can Anaheim win without him?
Yes.
I don't think they can win without him.
The series?
They're
no, the game. That game. Depending on how long. Every game that he's out for.
Well, sure, they can win any game, but over the course of a series, I think that.
If he's out for,
I pick Anaheim in seven. If you told me Bobby Ryan's on the series, I probably would have said Nashville in seven.
Well, okay, if he misses
one game, that could be changed. You know, they could win one game obviously without him. But I mean, yesterday on the first power play on the 5-on-3 there, they had Koivu on the first power play, not Ryan. So
Richie, I think in a one game off, if Getzlaff is out of the lineup, that's
bigger loss.
Bigger,
yeah,
or Perry, but Ryan,
yeah, both bigger, yeah, both bigger.
Ryan doesn't drive that line.
No, I agree.
That's
true. You make a good point there. If he's playing on that line together, those other two guys can pick up their games a bit. But it's a fairly big. That would be a huge loss. We don't know if there's been a suspension.
No, it hasn't come out yet. He really just steps on it. Bloom has the puck. The video's
that's
up
one
here.
Game.
We're watching
that's
the video.
One or two games.
Bloom has the puck, in his skates, trying.
It's happened like 3 a.m.
Actually, it wasn't a stomp. It was a kick more so.
No, he stepped on the top of a guy's foot.
His leg drew more so than the foot, I think.
Yeah, I disagree. I mean, you
it's
can
it's above
watch the
foot.
It's right on the top of a skate. Richie, you're out of here?
That's the way you debate.
Ryan's got the Jimmy legs.
Okay.
Richie, you're out of here?
I'm out of here.
Okay, we wish you good luck. Where are you off to?
I am out for another conference here.
Richie's conference.
But I will be back for the full 3 hours next week, thankfully.
I think you should have to be here to stay in the studio an extra hour next week.
I'll be
by
fully
yourself.
Willing. If the fans would listen, I would be here for an extra hour. But
just by yourself.
Just by myself.
Just by yourself. Not even on there, just sitting in the studio, like detention.
Well, we got 4 games today, by the way.
Yeah, they start at noon.
Yeah, one of which I'm going to miss, but the other 3 I'm going to try and catch. Can't wait.
Do you want us to have a second omelet for you? You want an omelet in your honor?
Have a good one, boys.
Bye, Richie.
An honor omelet.
An honor omelet.
Bye,
Richie. We'll talk to you later. We're still trying to find Aaron Ward.
Have a good conference.
We're trying to find Aaron Ward. We still have Mike Harrington in the Buffalo News. Stay with us. Lots more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Aaron Ward from TSN, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us here. Former first-round pick, 5th overall of the Winnipeg Jets. Did you, it's always nice to talk to a former Winnipeg Jet.
Former Jet, yeah. Picked, but never actually got to play there,
Do you still consider yourself a Jet?
Always. I mean, that's the start of my career, standing up on the stage, being welcomed in by Mike Smith. And, I had a couple visits to Winnipeg prior to eventually ending up in Detroit. So I felt like I was getting prepared to play in Winnipeg, and it just didn't come to fruition.
Well, there you go. Anyways, we're thrilled that you're able to join us now here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show in Winnipeg. Aaron, let's start. You have the, with us talking to you, we have the advantage and the good luck to be able to talk to a guy who's just recently retired from the NHL. So you have some insight into, you played with a number of different teams. So you have the insight into what's really going on in a lot of dressing rooms and the mindset of the players. So we're probably going to tap into that throughout this interview. Hopefully, that'll be okay with you. Starting in Boston, where, of course, you played for the Bruins for a number of years. The team lost game one to the Bruins, or to the Canadians rather. What is their mindset going to be going into game two?
Well, I don't know if you saw what came across the wire a couple hours ago, but Chara spent his evening in the hospital. I think, as I understand it, he was a little under the weather for the last few days, and I think that coupled with playing the games and his mentality of overtraining, he got himself in a precarious situation of being dehydrated. But it goes back again. There should be no panic in the Boston locker room right now. They're still that potent team, physical team. It was a very kind of dull game, if I put it that way. Great for the Habs. I mean, it's a great game in their fashion. It was up and down a little bit, but it was still pretty contained. Montreal didn't open up and give Boston much. It was a great performance by Price. You finally got Scott Gomez to show up for a game and contribute. So things went well for Montreal, but on the Boston end, they've got to maintain that mentality of, don't do anything that's drastic out there. Don't get caught up in the emotion of the game. Just play the game the way you're supposed to and be disciplined. Brad Marchand took a dumb penalty, and, just those things can't happen. You can't be behind the eight ball. Montreal is a pretty potent team. They got a great power play, and against Boston throughout the year, they ran at a clip of about 30%. So that's far exceeding the expectations of most power plays.
You talk about sort of not panicking. Bruins general manager Peter Chiarelli, before the series started, said that if the team doesn't win at least 2 playoff series, the year is a failure.
as a player, you have your general manager coming out and making those proclamations. Does that motivate you, or do you play a little bit tighter as a result of him saying things like that?
No, I don't think it's news to the players. You know, it's been a disappointment for a while, not really stepping up to the plate. Up 3-0 against Philly. Getting to game six to get back to now it's tied 3-3, and then they go into a game and they're up 3-0. I think that that is deemed a failure. You're just about handed an opportunity to go into the conference finals, and you hand it back to Philadelphia by letting them back into it. So in the year previous to I was a part of it, losing to Carolina, expectations were not that that was going to be something that was even in the realm of possibility, and it happened. So to come up short two consecutive years, yeah, it is the magic number 8. You have to have 8 wins in order to be already have this season considered even close to a success. They've got to get in the conference finals.
Aaron, we wanted to transition now to the Pittsburgh-Tampa series, and obviously Pittsburgh won Game 1, and then last night Tampa gave them a bit of a spanking with a 5-1 victory. In your opinion, what was Pittsburgh's downfall last night?
Mistakes, preparedness. I think it's everything. It's 7 games, and I hate using cliches during interviews or in any assessment of a series, but that's why it's 7 games, and it's the marathon, not a sprint analogy. You're gonna have bad games, just like in the regular season. You can't be at your best for every single game. And it happens during the playoffs. It's important though. The focus should be on the fact that it ends at 1 game. Pitt was not sharp from the goaltending end to the defensive end, and you got to give Tampa credit. They came out with a spark. They were on the road. They jumped on them. They got shots. One of the things, Fleury reminds me of a guy like Brodeur. You know, tough nut to crack there, but one of the things you have to do is direct shots towards them and hope for those rebounds. You saw that goal that Nate Thompson got driving the net after the little bobble in the neutral zone by the Pittsburgh D, but it's creating your opportunities. You just can't wait and get that perfect shot. With Fleury, he's going to stop most things. So get every single shot and hope for a rebound. And Tampa was great. You know, it's they got even production across the board from Tampa.
Moving to the Washington Rangers series, Washington with their new defensive style, as we've spoken about throughout the year, they've only allowed 2 goals in the first 2 games against the Rangers. What are they doing that has made them successful in shutting down the Rangers' offense?
It's tough because I looked at the game. Everybody's like, "Wow, look at what Washington did." You know, it's 2-1. They went to overtime, but I wasn't really impressed with their game 1. It's not something if you look at. Going forward into round 2 and 3, and you get a better opponent, and say you run up against a Boston or a Philly or even Buffalo right now. If you're going to play that style of game that they played against New York in Game 1, you're not going to win games. Game 2 is more impressive for the fact that really New York had not a whole lot. Coupled with the fact that you're not getting a very concentrated or a big performance from guys like Gabrick. Gabrick has been not even present for the series and much of the last part of the season. You know, it came up no goals in the last 10 games, not something you need from an all-star. But Washington has really stepped up and kept everything in the perimeter. Every time New York got across their blue line, the puck stayed to the outside. There was no real traffic, and you get that New York maybe throws Avery in there to disturb and get in front of Neuwirth and get some traffic. But you can't get to the front of the net if the puck is really not in your possession in the defensive zone. I mean, if Washington has the puck and retrieves every dump-in, or by the time you retrieve that puck, you're standing face against the glass and really have no support, there's not much offense can be generated. So Washington's been pretty good. And Pierre McGuire made a good point yesterday during his interview, during his telecast, that for the first time in a long time, you see Ovechkin buying into the concept that you get your 40 seconds, and if you expend your energy in the defensive zone, after that 40, 45 seconds, you got to make the line change, and you saw Ovechkin over and over. Not a single shift going over a minute. He's bought into the team concept, and really, I think Washington's taken that lead.
I believe there was even one shift where the Caps had the puck deep in the Rangers zone, and Ovechkin, rather than get involved in the offensive play, skated off to the bench for a line change, which is unheard of when you think of Alex Ovechkin.
It's not that players are selfish. It sometimes just takes a little time to get it. You know, and you think that your ultimate performance will direct you in a victorious manner, and it's going to be one guy, it's going to be Ovechkin, but it looks like he's cooling in that you know what? A fresher Ovechkin with more concentrated time and more concentrated effort is going to win the game. And he gets that it's going to take an entire team to win the Stanley Cup. You know, you watch teams that go about doing it, and it was Chicago across the board, pretty talented team last year. But no one component was the reason why it happened. It was a team-wide effort.
We're joined on the line by Aaron Ward of TSN.
Now, Nashville was up 1-0 on Anaheim, and then Anaheim took the game two yesterday, 5-3. What kind of system do the Ducks employ, and you know how successful will Nashville be in countering that system?
Well, I think that what you saw yesterday out of Anaheim was the fact that they accept that Nashville is such a system-oriented team. I listened to an interview of Mike Fisher, and he more or less came across saying that part of their mentality in Nashville is they system you to death to the point where they bore you to death.
Sure.
You know, it's like the New Jersey Devils of the 90s, where they just there's not a guy out of position. It's a slow, monotonous game, and they capitalize on opportunities. And what Anaheim finally did, and you saw in Bobby Ryan's goal, third one, quick transition. Don't let Nashville get the position. Once they're in position, they're set. But if you can beat someone and create an opening, then they have to readjust midstream, and it's tough to, when you're so bent on systems, to then have to, you know, this guy has to pick this guy up, and everybody has to feed off one guy making that decision, where if you're set in your positioning within a system, you know, you just let things occur, and you know this guy, well, that's his territory. Making guys think and get out of their comfort zone is essential to beating the system, and that's what the Anaheim did yesterday. It was a high octane game. They got the puck moving. There was a little grit involved there. Unfortunately for Bobby Ryan, he looks like he might have got himself in some trouble. So there might be some changes coming game three. But
do you expect
Anaheim
to see him suspended? Do you expect to see Bobby Ryan suspended?
For me is, you know what? I will concede the fact that as a former player and so new to this, I it's tough for me to offer opinions on what I think will happen. I don't have that basis of knowledge like McKenzie and Drager and knowing how to compare. But I think, is there a possibility? Absolutely. You know, it's different. You know, it was so flagrant to bring your leg up that high and then stomp. And I've seen it happen. I think I've done it before, but I haven't done it in the capacity that I get my foot up there. It's more of a jabbing, kicking motion to your foot, a slew foot. You know, they're battling for a puck. And he is actually, Bobby Ryan's actually pinning Blum along the boards. And so when it's down there, it makes only sense to me that you would drag your foot out and try and pick the guy's foot up, not raise your leg and then stomp the top of the laces. And the weird part is the way in which he landed that foot. You see Bum's ankle kind of turn inwards, which is a pretty dangerous thing. And anytime you use an escape blade and in a manner that it's a weapon, that's tough. You know, it's not something that you recommend as a player out there.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Aaron Ward. And Aaron, you obviously played in Detroit for many years and won two Stanley Cups, and you played with one of the best defensemen of all time in Nicklas Lidström. What did you see in Lidström on a day-to-day basis that ensures that he keeps performing at that high, top-notch level?
That seems to be the $64,000 question. You know, it's not that he does anything in particular. He's just so consistent. It's consistent in his being, consistent in his approach, consistent in who he is. It's knowing that what he brings to the table every day is not just enough. It's beyond what most can. So he's such a smart, savvy, heady player. His skill set's unbelievable. You always find that he's in the right position at the right time. It's as a defenseman, and you're playing the game, and you know, occasionally you pick up a feed for a game when you're in another town. You sit down and watch Nick Lidström. It's frustrating to see how easy the game comes to him. You know, it's little intricacies of stick positioning and positioning of his body and getting in the right spot on the ice where, you know, most guys struggle to find, you know, the quiet zones. He always figures out where he should be to allow himself the most time when he has puck possession. It's something you can't teach. It's innate. It's in him, and the unfortunate part is it's not for sale. I would have bought some of that a long time ago.
Absolutely. Aaron, we'll let you go on this last question. You played in Detroit during that final year for Winnipeg when the Jets and the Red Wings met in the first round of the playoffs. You know, the Jets, there was a foregone conclusion that they were leaving at that point in time. With the Coyotes now and the distraction about the uncertainty of the team's future, do you think that is affecting the players, or do you think that they're able to sort of block that out and instead just focus on the task at hand on the ice?
Well, I think someone in the Phoenix organization's got to be telling the players, you know what, this is beyond our control. We play hockey. We're a team. We present ourselves representing the Phoenix Coyotes, and all of the decisions made involved with this the circumstance are out of our control. And you go out and play a game, and it'd be financial suicide for anybody to prematurely start making any comments about where they are or they're not going. You know, Phoenix is in the midst of a playoff run, and they've got to play against the Detroit Red Wings, and that's a big attraction. So monetarily, you'd be shooting yourself in the pocketbook if you made an announcement and Phoenix fans just decided to stay away. And I think that, there's so much going on and so much concentration on the fact that the playoffs are in full swing that the NHL doesn't want to detract from that. You know, why do you really want to make an announcement? Why do you want to draw the attention away from what's great about this game? It's the game itself, the teams and the players. So I just don't see anything coming out that's valid. The only people that are really concerned about it are the people of Phoenix, the fans of Phoenix, the fans in Winnipeg, and media members that can get a lot of play out of it. You know, I don't think anybody truly knows. Everybody seems to have an inside, track to the information. But when it comes down to it, the one guy that does know is Gary Bettman, and he doesn't seem to be showing his hand.
Aaron Ward of TSN Versus and the Big Ten Network, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, thanks for having me.
Take care, Aaron.
Thanks a lot, Aaron.
Let's go to break. When we come back after these, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News.
Back-to-back interviews, Drew.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm not sure what that last little noise was, but it's time to go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Do we have him on the air?
Mike Harrington? No? What happened? I don't know.
Did we miss a call?
I thought Remus had him on the line.
It's funny, Drew. We have call waiting in the studio, don't we?
I don't think so. I thought he gave me the thumbs up. Did we drop the call?
Well...
Nope, nothing there. Well, okay, we're going to... Mike, are you there?
Yeah, he dropped off. There you are.
Oh, there you go. Mike, welcome back. Thanks. The technical difficulties notwithstanding. Thanks very much for joining us again on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Mike, let's start with the two big defensemen, the two big defensemen that are injured in the series, Jordan Leopold for the Sabres, Chris Pronger for the Flyers. Can you give us an update on both of their status?
Well, we were out yesterday at the Flyers practice facility in New Jersey, and Pronger skated on his own with a couple scratches for about 50 minutes, took a puck one time, slid it up against the boards, didn't really shoot it off. He looks like he's a long way away.
Wow.
Leopold told me that he's still a ways away, but his timetable all along has been about April 25th. He practiced with him yesterday, took part in a few drills, no contact drills, but he was shooting and passing the puck and handling the puck and doing some spins, so he's certainly much farther along than Pronger is. You know, Leopold could be ready by about game six of this series, but a lot of times you don't change your lineup late in the series. But, you know, I'm really thinking that we may not see Pronger at all in this series.
Wow.
I have a couple of questions for you about Pronger, Mike. How much did that absence really affect specifically the Flyers' power play? And I'm assuming that you were involved in that media scrum involving Peter Laviolette. And how frustrated did he look or seem when he was answering questions about Chris Pronger's absence?
You know, he seems kind of matter-of-fact about it. He hasn't been here for a while, so it's business as usual is basically where he's going with it. I don't think Pronger's absence necessarily killed the Flyers defensively. The Sabres got very little inside in that game all night. You know, I mean, I know the Flyers defense did a good job in that regard. Buffalo's forwards are pretty much a rendered moot for the most part. I think that the power play clearly is where the Flyers suffered in game one. 1-for-5, they didn't have a good job in their 5-on-3. Pronger could have really made a difference there.
How much this is, if he's, we're just speculating at this point, so we won't hold you to anything here, but, if he doesn't come back for this series, how much does that change the dynamic of the series? I mean, Buffalo was sort of a heavy underdog. Everyone sort of said, Ryan Miller has to steal the series for them to win if they're going to beat the Flyers. But without Pronger there, how much does that change the dynamic of the entire series?
Well, I mean, we're already starting to see the shift in the theories about Buffalo anyway. I mean, if you look at it, they have the best record in the NHL since February 23rd, the day Terry Pegula took over as the owner, 16-4-4. They have the best record in the Eastern Conference since January 1st. I mean, it's not a small sample size here. They're seventh place finish in the conference is reflective of their poor start. I mean, this may be how these teams match up right now, especially if Buffalo wins today. We'll have to see how it goes down the road, but, you know, the Flyers, it's a real downer to not have Pronger back. I think the target all along was for the opener of the playoffs, and it didn't work out that way.
It's funny, Mike, you mentioned you know, the fact that they went into the playoffs 16-4-4. Buffalo went in hot. New York limped in.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, the hottest team going right now was the Sabres. They got into that number seven spot. I mean, the Rangers obviously, you know, backed in the last night of the season. The Blackhawks backed in the last night of the season in the West. If you're looking for a team of momentum in this series, it's certainly Buffalo, not Philadelphia. The Flyers went 9-9-7 in their last 25 games.
Yeah.
Lost the playoff opener. That's pretty mediocre.
It's probably the definition of mediocre. Now, you talked about the Sabres' great streak. You know, since Pegula came on board, you know, what's changed? I mean, is the team playing a different style? Is it just really a confidence boost?
It's a complete culture change. The players feel that ownership wants to win, that ownership will do what it takes to win. Less than a week after Pegula took over, what did they do? The trade deadline paid for Brad Boy is a guy who made $4 million and had a $4 million contract for next year. That would have never happened under the previous ownership. And that sent a tremendous message in that locker room. They feel the surge of interest in the community, the surge of hope. The players are certainly playing at the top of their game. It's just a complete attitude and culture change. And if you don't think that that filters down and affects what happens on the ice, the Sabres are giving you a prime example of why it does.
Mike, the Sabres shut out the Flyers in Game 1. Strategically, what did the Sabres do or change in order to neutralize the Flyers' offense in Game 1?
You know, they really cut away a lot of the east-west passing in the offensive zone. And, you know, you look at the stats, and, you know, Miller made 35 saves, but he saw most every shot. His body was great at collecting rebounds. He was very soft with the puck. And the Sabres blocked 16 shots as a team. They got it in shot lanes. They did a tremendous job there. When they weren't blocking the shot, they were clearing the way for Miller to see it. And the Flyers generated very little traffic. The Sabres were very strong in front of the net. And it was a really good defensive effort. Miller wants you to get out of the way or block the shot. Don't screen him. Don't tip it. They did a great job of that.
Certainly a guy who's not a household name is Chris Butler, yet he led all players in Game 1 with 26 minutes of ice time. A lot of that was on penalty kill, but he still led the team in even strength as well. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Chris Butler and why he's playing so much for the Sabres?
He was scratched 17 out of 18 games in a period around December into early February. The one game he played 10 minutes. So we're talking about a guy in the doghouse, but, you know, they put him with Tyler Myers. He really took off. Myers really took off. It was just a question of confidence. Butler's a lot of talent. He's a good puck handler. He had basically lost his confidence and was thinking too much about every play he was making. Now he's reacting more. He's playing with Myers. They've really fed off each other. They room together on the road. And here's a guy, you know, who would have ever thought 26 minutes in the first playoff game from Chris Butler, but he played great. He was one of the best players on the ice for either side.
You know, the thought can often be after a Game 1 road win that a team like the Sabres could be susceptible to an emotional letdown in Game 2. How is Lindy Ruff preparing the team to ensure that they come out with an acceptable amount of energy for this Game 2?
Yeah, they don't have any concern of a letdown at all. They've been playing playoff games really since January. Their playoff lives depended on it. They were in a double-digit point hole in mid-January from the eighth place. So I don't see any letdown here. I see them thinking of this as a major opportunity. Their goal, obviously, at the start of the series was to get a split in Philadelphia, but now they got the first one. They're thinking they can put the hammer down if they can get two out of here and go home. So I really expect the Sabres to come out flying today, and I expect the Flyers to, too. I mean, the Flyers have to, you know, they don't necessarily be better than they were in Game 1. They were pretty good, and even Laviolette said that. They have to convert their opportunities, though. I mean, so it really should be a high level game, especially those first 10 minutes.
What should the viewers of that game look for, you know, early on to see, you know, as setting the tone? You know, what does Buffalo have to do early on in the game? What should our viewers look for that Buffalo is doing early on in the game that would indicate that they're on their way maybe to taking both of the games in Philly?
I think you got to watch the first 10 minutes because the Flyers are going to throw the kitchen sink, the bathroom sink, the garage sink, everything at them. You know, if the Sabres can survive that first 10 minutes and settle the game down and get things back to normalcy, they'll be in really good shape. I think the Flyers need to get some confidence, a quick goal, get some confidence they can beat Ryan Miller, is really key for them, because obviously they were shut out in game one. And the longer the shutout goes in game two, Miller starts getting into their heads even more. And watch the crowd here. The crowd will turn on the Flyers on a hat if Buffalo scores or if Philly has more bad power plays. By the end of game one, they were in a pretty surly mood. And again, not just one game. This has gone back to the Flyers almost 2 months.
I'm shocked to hear that a Philadelphia crowd could be in a surly mood.
Well, we had no sightings of Santa Claus or Mike Schmidt or Ron Jaworski the other night. We just had a pretty bad Flyers power play.
Well, there you go. That'll be an area that they'll need to improve in to get Game 2 success. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy Game 2 tonight.
All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Take care.
I just got a craving for a Philly cheesesteak, Drew.
Really?
Where could you get a good Philly cheesesteak in Winnipeg? Probably nowhere.
I have absolutely no idea. Why don't we go to...
Have you been to Philly, Drew?
I've never been to Philly. Richie has been to Philly on numerous occasions. He's got some family there. But instead of Philly cheesesteak, why don't we see if we can find a commercial and then come back with one final segment?
Sounds good.
Okay, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290.
Hey.
Nicely done. That was good timing. Who did that?
Reams in the studio!
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. In case you missed any of the program, we heard from Bob Duff of the Windsor Star. We heard from Aaron Ward of TSN Versus and the Big Ten Network. Yeah, he moves around.
One of my favorite channels of the Big Ten Network. They got some good wrestling and diving on their track.
Really?
Really, lacrosse.
Shot put, javelin.
It's in HD also.
In HD. And I'm not going to turn down sports in HD.
No, that's very true. And we just heard from Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. In case you missed any of those interviews or any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe, and it will be automatically sent to your iPod each and every week.
Drew, you're stealing Remus's thunder here.
I'm not stealing.
Let Remus talk.
I'm getting to Remus in a minute. You can also follow the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. We're pleased to welcome into the studio for the final segment here, Michael Remus, the operator of the R-Desk here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And Remus, a round of applause for you. You accurately predicted the overtime winner between San Jose and Los Angeles.
Well, you know, let me tell you, Drew. You know, during, you know, the playoff time is a great time for tweeting. Everyone's live tweeting their thoughts during the playoff games. So, you know, I was having some fun. You know, me and some fans were talking on the Twitter, you know, at Illegal Curve, twitter.com/Illegal Curve. And I said, hey, who's everyone's, you know, thoughts on overtime winners? A few people tweeted me, and I took Pavelski and I believe Penner. And I said, you heard it here. I knew when I predicted.
Did you put it on the board?
I said, you heard it here on Twitter, time stamped. And, you know, lo and behold, he scored, and I was overjoyed. It was great.
And you know that even a stopped clock is right twice a day.
There, absolutely.
You know what's funny, guys? You guys weren't at Richie's 2 nights ago, but Richie, we did a playoff pool at his house. There's about 4 of us, and I believe...
You mean an overtime pool?
Sorry, an overtime pool in that for that game, and I believe Richie picked Marlowe and Hanzus, and 2 minutes later, the TSN panel came up, and Bob McKenzie picked the exact same 2 guys as Richie.
I've actually never seen Bob McKenzie and Richard in the same room at the same time. So
they've met.
I'm not saying they're the same person, but
they've met before. Remember about 7 or 8 years ago, Richard went down to Toronto and met him.
No. He's a very hard worker.
Tim with the drop there.
New sound
there,
man.
You know, that's what I love about overtime in the playoffs. There's nothing better. Well, it's the best thing ever. There's nothing better than multiple overtime game, because it's the. But I love overtime pools. You know, everybody throws $1 or $2 into the pot.
It's a very Canadian thing. I don't know if they do that in the U.S. It's a very Canadian thing.
But you know, all the
I'm not saying that Americans can't do it. I'm just saying it's a pretty Canadian thing.
Well, I think hockey is a Canadian thing in general. A little bit.
Fair enough.
But, you know, everybody's doing it on Twitter. You know, you mentioned it, Remus, that you sent it out with your predictions. You got a lot of responses.
Did you get paid via PayPal?
All the TSN guys were also doing that, you know, so that everybody's sending out their predictions. It's sort of something that everybody must, you know, you sit around with the boys, you watch the game, boys and girls, we're, an inclusive society here.
Drew, you're creeping us out a little bit.
You sit around and you, okay, overtime, who you have? Throw your money on the table, write your names on the ground or on a piece of paper so you hold it, and you can run around holding that money and that prediction paper later on.
Well, you know, the one thing about overtime is there's nothing more about overtime than I love is West Coast overtime games that go multiple overtimes. I love staying up late. I love watching overtime. Great. And I was really hoping that
this game would go for quite a while. I had gone and made a huge bowl of popcorn for the start of overtime, anticipating, you know, a really long overtime. And I'm like, and I thought to myself, oh no, I have this huge bowl of popcorn. What happens if this game ends in a minute? I mean, I have this huge bowl. Am I still going to eat it? And I just wanted to go to bed.
You should invite me over, Reem. I'll finish that bowl of popcorn.
Well, luckily it went about, you know, 15 minutes.
15 minutes. So did you finish the bowl of popcorn?
I finished the bowl. I had to go quickly, though. I was worried that they were going to score and I'd have to go to bed.
Do you turn into a pump? Do you have a bedtime or something we don't know about?
I don't have a bedtime, but it was, you know, after 12:30, I have to wake up. You know,
Remus is a working man. He's got a little bit of a bedtime. It might not be a set-in-stone bedtime, but, you know, the clock is ticking. So.
I was in Calgary this past week, so it was a little bit bizarre because, you know, the game started at 5 o'clock. The early game is at 5 o'clock in Calgary. So, you know, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. I mean, I don't mind that, but then, you know, we're watching the late game, and it goes into overtime, and it ends. I'm like, it's only 11:30.
You know,
like, that's not fun.
You know, Drew,
you're right. I agree with you. I mean, I remember... You know, the classic overtime games that we've had.
Pittsburgh-Philly?
Pittsburgh-Philly is the most recent one.
Primo?
And of course, so the Primo one. I mean, that's the Pittsburgh-Philly one. Where did they go? Five overtimes?
Yep.
And then the one before that, of course, in the 80s, is the Islanders-Washington overtime.
I don't know. There was one a few years
Who
ago.
Who scored the goal? Peter Bondra?
No.
Sorry, Reem, I cut you
that.
Off.
It's way before that.
Oh, before... didn't Pavanka score a winner one, or am I...
No.
Okay.
Like, this is... I'm talking about, like, mid-80s.
Great
Remus,
name
draw. I'm not sure you were born yet, Remus.
Okay, well, there's one... A recent overtime a few years ago... It was Vancouver-Dallas. I remember it was a terrible game, and it went for, it was really low scoring, just an awful, awful game. It went to about five overtimes, and there weren't many chances. I remember staying up to about two or three, and I was during exam time, so I got picked up for school to go study, and the guys in the car saw me like, oh, you definitely stayed up to watch that awful game.
Who doesn't? If it's going that long, you got to stay up. You've made it that far.
Do you guys want to be that guy at the office that everyone's talking about the overtime goal and you're like, oh, I went to bed too early and everyone's talking about this epic goal? You don't want to be that guy that misses the goal. You just don't want to be, especially in the first round. The first round's the best because there's 16 teams and you're getting hockey like pretty much. Today we're going to get hockey for what, 12 hours?
Well, you get four straight games today. The game started in about 5 minutes is the Red Wings-Phoenix game, and you'll go right up until the late game tonight, which is LA-San Jose. That's going to get underway, I think, 9 o'clock Winnipeg time. So you're right. I mean, the LA-San Jose game on TSN as well. TSN's got the Philly, Buffalo, and San Jose LA today. But you're right. You have 12 hours worth of hockey. Somebody it was on a Facebook page or something. They said, you know, ladies, say goodbye to your men. The playoffs have started. We'll see in, you know, 6 to 8 weeks.
I think that's an accurate statement.
This is sort of off topic from the current playoffs, but what they said, what I read about the NHL's new TV deal, the new American TV deal, which is they're negotiating, going to come into effect next year, what they're talking about doing is sort of compacting the playoffs, you know, because, you know, the playoffs are more stretched out than, say, the regular season is, in that, you know, in the regular season, I mean, how often do teams have 2 days off between games? Like, they had Detroit and Phoenix played Wednesday, then they had Thursday and Friday off. They're talking about compacting the playoffs to make it more of a March Madness-esque type of playoffs, so that's just game after game after game, bang, 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 bang.
You know, Reem, I don't know what you think about that, but I think that would be difficult to do because they've always gone with four games a night, right, in the first round, four or five games, right? Try to space it out. That would be tough to do with hockey because you don't want to have six. You're talking about maybe having more games per night, right?
No, I'm just talking about having a game every second night or two and three nights, something like that, as opposed to, there's no reason for Detroit and Phoenix to have had two games off between the game one and game two.
Well,
and it kills momentum, and it kills... I mean, the worst part about the NBA playoffs is the fact that it stretches out, like, for the first month. They play every three... They don't play a game. They play a game, then they take three nights off. It's all done for TV, don't get me wrong. And the NHL, apparently, or the networks are trying to differentiate the NHL playoffs from the NBA playoffs by making it more of a... Well, March Madness type, where you're playing, you know,
how would you logistically pull that off?
Well, you fly. I mean, you're not going to talk. You're not, Detroit and Phoenix aren't going to play tonight, fly to Phoenix, and then play tomorrow. No one's talking about that. But you do, you know, there's no reason why you can't play, you know, back-to-back games. They do it during the regular season.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that. The one thing that was kind of puzzling to me was, I think the first day of the playoffs, there was more games, and then the next day
yes.
there was less games. I don't understand why they didn't just start with the even number of games on both days.
That's what I wondered, too. They started with five games that first day and then three games. Another pet peeve of mine, and God help them if they can't figure it out, when they have two game sevens being played at the same time.
Ugh.
They had that, it was last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember when, that they had two game sevens being played at the same time.
That should never happen.
It should never happen. You have to figure out a way to schedule it so that you, if there's a game seven, everybody's attention should be on that game. And then if there's a and it's one thing if there's a game seven and then another game seven starts 20 minutes after that, like after the first one ends. That's great. That's a hockey lover's dream. But the fact, it's inexcusable to be playing two game sevens at the exact same time. Inexcusable.
Maybe in the first round. But
no, inexcusable.
Okay, but you first round's tough because there's more games. But
I don't care. Figure it out. You have 14 zillion television channels.
You know, Drew, we're not stopping you from becoming a television executive.
You're not? You guys aren't standing in my way? That's good to know.
I'm not going to stand in your way for anything.
Tim's giving us the two-minute signal. You guys want to head to Cheers and Jeers, wrap up this fine program?
Let's walk down that road.
Cheers.
Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg.
I point to Remus to give him the honor of getting the first cheer.
I'm the one who determines who gets the cheer first.
Yeah, we know,
first.
Drew. We know. You're a tyrant.
I have the conscience. I am a tyrant.
I'm going to cheer Drew Mandel for his appearance on...
Don't cheer me for being a...
Yep, you're getting the cheer. You look great. I was proud of you, Drew. You look good on TV. I know that your parents were proud. Your grandparents were proud. Good job. Way to support the Liberal Party on TV. You look good. You did a great job.
Yeah. For the record... Ezra has a large liberal sign in his yard.
I'm not afraid to say I'm a liberal. I support my red.
You know, and for the record, we'll be having that clip on at illegalcurve.com later this afternoon, along with this show in podcast form.
That's right.
But also, on to my jeer. I paid to do this. I just picked him in a playoff pool. But Bobby Ryan, I'm going to jeer him for that foot stomp. We watched the replay. He, you know, pretty clearly kicks his foot up and stomps it down on a Bloom skate. You know, that's pretty dangerous and only something that maybe Happy Gilmore would do on the ice. But I'm going to jeer him. That's not acceptable.
I must say that's quite altruistic of you. You're sacrificing the karma that your fantasy hockey team is going to get by jeering Bobby Ryan. But maybe it's going to pay, you know, maybe he'll get suspended, but maybe it'll pay itself back by him coming back and being dominant on the ice or something.
You know, when I also have a Jared Stoll on my team as well, so...
So you're really in trouble.
I'm really in trouble.
Okay, so...
I'd also like to jeer myself, Reem, and apologize for not having the Hockey Pool website. I know there was a bit of a gate there's a bit of a gate this week, so I apologize. Our friendship is bigger than my, my inability to get the Hockey Pool up on the website. So
can we wrap this up? Can you guys deal with that?
We're friends again. Are we friends again?
We'll hug it out.
Can you guys
hug
it out after the show?
Good,
thanks. I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to cheer our good friend and our colleague here on Sports Radio 1290. I'm going to cheer Leah Hextall. She's in Kenora. She's in Kenora as we speak. She's going to be broadcasting the final of the 2011 Allen Cup, which is taking place in Kenora. That'll be broadcast on TSN2 at 5 o'clock this evening. So if you want to watch a little bit of amateur hockey in between, you know, your NHL games, go ahead and do that.
Yep.
That's on TSN2,
awesome.
5 o'clock tonight.
Senior hockey.
This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to the following guests: Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, Bob Duff of the Windsor Star, Aaron Ward of TSN. We do encourage you to stay tuned to Sports Radio 1290. The Vancouver Canucks playoff game will be broadcast tomorrow. Pre-game show is at 6 o'clock. Puck drop at 7 here on Sports Radio 1290. And we also encourage you to check out the Illegal Curve Twitter page at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and www.illegalcurve.com. And until next Saturday morning, we wish you good afternoon and good luck.